And good evening. You're tuning in to CKLN 88.1 FM. My name is Susie Alvarez.
And I'm Kristen Schwartz.
And you're listening to Word of Mouth News for this Friday, November the 12th.
It is 6:02 in the p.m.
And we're broadcasting out of Ryerson University.
On tonight's show, we're going to be hearing about an ongoing lockout north of Toronto affecting 500 workers, employees of Sears, and members of Steelworkers Local 9537. So we'll be hearing about that in the first half of the show. And the second half of the show, we will be hearing from Don White, bringing us Anti-Psychiatry Radio.
And before we move to that, we have headlines. And headlines come to you thanks in part to Democracy Now!, Rabble.ca, Intercontinental Cry, and Labor Start.
U.S. President Obama arrived in Japan today on the last stop of his 10-day Asia tour. Obama will attend the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit amidst a dispute with the Japanese government over relocating the U.S. military base in Okinawa. Obama comes to Japan after participating in G20 talks. That's right, there's more G20 talks, held in South Korea, where he failed to finalize a long-stalled free trade deal. Before leaving Seoul, Obama defended last week's $600 billion move by the Federal Reserve to buy up government bonds. Obama rejected critics' claims that the U.S. is waging a currency war by devaluing the dollar.
And as Obama defended U.S. monetary policy, he failed to win international backing in the U.S.-Chinese dispute over China's currency. The U.S. has accused China of artificially manipulating the price of the yuan for economic gain. On the domestic front, President Obama said he remains opposed to Republican calls for extending the Bush-era tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans, but he suggested he may compromise to ensure the cuts are preserved for those making less than $250,000.
The death toll from Haiti's cholera outbreak has jumped to 800. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention says that some 160 deaths have been recorded this week, more than half coming in the past 24 hours. The number of infections has also grown to 11,000. There are fears the disease could rapidly spread through the camps housing earthquake survivors around the capital city of Port-au-Prince. Yesterday, hundreds of residents demonstrated in the neighborhood of Cité Soleil to protest the response to the outbreak. Virginie Gaudet, a nurse working in Cité Soleil, said the number of infections is growing by the day.
And reports are emerging from Burma that the Burmese military junta has approved the release of jail pro-democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi. The Nobel laureate's latest prison term is set to expire on Saturday. She has spent 15 of the past 21 years in detention. Suu Kyi is expected to reject a conditional release if the Burmese junta insists she abandoned political activity.
U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton hosted Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in New York yesterday in the latest bid to revive stalled peace talks, so-called peace talks, with the Palestinian Authority. Clinton and Netanyahu reportedly discussed U.S. incentives for Israel to renew a partial settlement freeze. Last month, Israel rejected an Obama administration offer to back Israel's insistence on maintaining a long-term military presence along the eastern border of a future Palestinian state. The U.S. also offered Israel military equipment and a pledge to veto U.N. resolutions on Arab-Israeli peace for at least 1 year. Netanyahu reportedly rejected the proposals, even though the administration had asked only for a two-month extension of the freeze. Thursday's talks came just 3 days after Israel announced it would build more than 1,000 settlement homes in occupied East Jerusalem. Appearing with Netanyahu before the meeting, Clinton avoided mention of the latest settlement construction.
And Wall Street firms are reportedly exploiting a loophole in financial reform legislation to continue the practice known as proprietary trading, in which banks trade financial securities from their own commercial accounts. Former Federal Reserve Chair Paul Volcker had proposed the curbs to help undo some of the damage of the 1999 repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, which had ensured the separation of commercial and investment banking. But according to the Financial Times, banks have continued to practice because the Volcker rule excludes principal investment or long-term direct purchases of securities and assets.
Also in the United States, a new DNA test has shown that a Texas prisoner executed 10 years ago was convicted on insufficient evidence. According to the Innocence Project, a single hair used as the lone piece of physical evidence against Claude Jones did not actually belong to Jones and may have come from the murder victim. Jones was put to death on September 7, 2000, in the closing weeks of George W. Bush's term as governor. The Innocence Project says that Bush's aides failed to inform him that Jones was seeking genetic testing on the hair strand. Had the test been granted, the prosecution would not have had sufficient evidence to convict Jones under Texas law. The case was already thrown in doubt in 2003 when a key witness recanted his claim that Jones had confessed. In his 5 years of state office, George W. Bush presided over the most execution of any U.S. governor in modern history.
Here in Canada, members of the Wikoba Nation have expressed major concerns over a potential hydraulic fracturing or fracking project near Lake Ainslie, the largest freshwater lake in Cape Breton. The Toronto-based company Petroworth Resources says they are on target to start drilling for oil by mid-November. But representatives from the Kewoso and Labrador clan and the Wabanaki Confederacy and clans say Petroworth still hasn't carried out a consultation process or even informed the Mi'kmaq community of any potential risks. Hydraulic fracking is a notoriously toxic process that involves the use of hundreds of different chemicals, tons of sand, and millions of liters of water, which are injected at high pressure into underground rock formations to release the oil and gas within them. This in turn shatters the rock. Aside from the emissions released into the air during the actual fracking, most of the chemicals stay below ground after they're injected into the rock, along with any remaining oil and gas. From there, it can leak into nearby bodies of water. According to the independent investigative group ProPublica, more than 1,000 cases of well water contamination have been documented across the United States, while several cases have also been documented in Canada. The biggest concern for the Wikoba is whether or not Petroworth's fracking will contaminate Lake Ainslie. Most of Lake's waters drains north into the Margiri watershed, but it also feeds Sky River, which runs into the opposite direction, straight through the reserve. The lack of consultation with the Wikoba Nation also appears to undermine a recent agreement between Canada, Nova Scotia, and the Mi'kmaq, signed on August 31st, the landmark agreement established, quote, an independent, clear, and efficient means for Canada and Nova Scotia to consult the Mi'kmaq of Nova Scotia on proposed activities or projects, unquote.
And now we go to a feature story for tonight's program. Here in Toronto, approximately 500 members of the Steelworkers Local 9537 have been locked out at the Sears Canada warehouse in Vaughan, Ontario, since April 1st. On Monday, the union held a picket line rally at the warehouse featuring speakers from the locked out workers and from supportive members of the Ontario Legislature and the Parliament of Canada. On Tuesday, local members held a leafleting action outside the Eaton Centre, urging customers not to shop at Sears until the company returns to the bargaining table to negotiate a fair agreement. The lockout occurred after employees refused to accept Sears' demands for major concessions. Despite a yearly profit of $250 million, Sears has refused to negotiate since the lockout started and has hired scabs to perform the locked-out workers' jobs, according to the union. In support of the locked-out workers, the steelworkers is ramping up its Don't Shop at Sears campaign through a massive leafleting action across Canada. During the month of November, union members and supporters will be leafleting at high-traffic Sears stores across the country. Prior to the key U.S. shopping day of the year, November 26, which is also known in the United States as Black Friday, the union will send an automated Don't Shop at Sears phone message to the households of well over 800,000 of its members and their families across North America. The union will also use radio advertising in some key markets. It's also extending the boycott to include Sears Vacations and will draw attention to the exorbitant 29.9% interest rate on the Sears card. So we're going to go first to an excerpt from a recording from the rally held on Monday with head of the Ontario Federation of Labour. This is Sid Ryan speaking in Vaughan earlier this week. We hope.
The common denominator in all of those strikes are we're dealing with foreign-owned companies that are coming into Canada and taking advantage of the lax laws in this province. Clearly, they know they can bus scabs across their picket lines at will. They know they can go to the courts and get injunctions against these workers every single day of the week. Down in Brantford, we have USW members taken into court for simply taking photographs of the scabs crossing a picket line. After 2 years of being on strike, you have to say to yourself, this is not a fair and balanced collective agreement system, a bargaining system that we've got in this province any longer. When you put workers on strike for 2 solid years, or in your case, for 8 solid months, you know full well that that's an abuse of workers, that's an abuse of a system that was never intended to use it to keep people rotting on a picket line for months on end, or in some cases, for years on end. So my friends, first off, I got to commend all of those workers who stayed on this picket line for 8 solid months. Hats off to you, sisters and brothers, for taking on that struggle. But now, as you've heard from the Director of Steelworkers, you're moving into a new phase in your campaign. And this is a phase where I'm hoping we can begin to mobilize the rest of the labor movement in behind your strike. We got to be able to make Sears feel it at the pocketbook, and we sincerely make them feel it in the run-up to Christmas time. We ought to be outside of every one of those Sears stores anywhere in this province to send a signal that we'll not be beaten into submission and we'll not be starved into submission by the antics of this government and of the employer. We demand, as a recourse, we demand that anti-scab legislation in this province, such that workers, when they go out on strike, that they have a fighting chance to be able to get a decent collective agreement. So my friends, stay strong. The Ontario Federation of Labour will be with you every step of the way. Thank you very much.
And that was the Sid Ryan of the Ontario Federation of Labour addressing a solidarity picket line rally at the Sears warehouse in Vaughan on Monday. Again, that rally was organized by the United Steelworkers in support of the 500-plus members of Steelworkers Local 9537 who have been locked out since April 1st. We're going to go now to a conversation with the local president, Robert Coyle, who has been working in the returns department at that warehouse for many years, but hasn't been working in the past 8 months because he's been on the picket line. And he explains the issues that the workers are faced with and their strategy as they go into the cold winter months ahead.
Over 6 months, that's a long time to be out on the line. Can you tell us what is motivating your members? What are you fighting for?
Well, actually, we're into our 8th month. It's we're fighting for our jobs. I think what the company is trying to do is to ultimately bust the union. I think that's what they're into, busting the union instead of getting a contract.
So the company's walked away from the table three times, and you've walked away once. What are the sticking points in the negotiations?
Well, a number of things they want to change in the contract to state as per company policy as amended from time to time. Definition of an associate, a seasonal associate, statutory holidays, vacation times, shift premium, the work week, overtime, benefits programs and short-term disability, company register retirement plan, call-in policy on absences, the term of the contract, and wage structure. All those areas.
Isn't that just about everything that's usually covered in a collective agreement?
Yeah, they want to change everything. They want to change the meat of our contract to state company according to company policy.
And company policy would be determined by them and not in negotiations with you.
It would be determined by them, and they can change it from time to time whenever it suits them.
Okay, so just a few minutes ago you said that you think that the company is really into just busting the union and getting them out of the business. Tell us about Sears in Canada and its relationship to unions and union organizing.
Well, our last meeting with the company, the lawyer representing the company stated to us right in our face, "We don't like you. We don't want you. But we will try to negotiate with you and let you live another day," quote, quote, as he says. They don't like unions. The CEO in the United States hates unions, and I guess he's prepared to spend millions of dollars to try to get rid of our local.
Hmm. And how many Sears employees are there in Canada?
There's about 33,000, I believe.
And how many of those 33,000 are in a union right now?
I really don't know, because Sears is very secretive about who is and who isn't unionized. I think there's probably three or four units that are unionized, and they're afraid. They told us that they're afraid that the union is going to try to get into their other locations. Like they're mainly concerned about the warehouses in Belleville, Montreal, Calgary, and places like that.
You were telling me earlier that the owner of the main shareholder, that is, of Sears, who lives in the United States, Eddie Lampert, that what did you say his salary was?
Well, he's the first man in history, to my knowledge, that pays himself $1 billion a year. A billion.
Right, right.
CEO downtown, I think he probably gets about $3.5 million. He's American, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. And then there's the folks that are making the whole business possible. That's you guys.
Sears made $240 million profit last year, and they wouldn't have been able to do it without the people in the Vaughan Logistics Center. The company asked us to meet targets, and we knew that that April was coming, and we knew the possibility that the lockout was going to happen, and we still helped Sears reach every target right up until February. And then the next month, the CEOs got their big bonuses, and we got locked out at the end of the month.
It's pretty stark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's turned out to be a pretty mean company compared to what it used to be.
Tell us about the work that you do in the Vaughan warehouse.
Well, I work in the return goods area. The work that is stuff that people order and they're not satisfied with it, or they're not home, or whatever the case might be. The product is delivered to their home, and then it's brought back to the store, and then it's delivered to the warehouse, and it has to be reprocessed. So that's basically the work that I do there. It's the work at Vaughan overall. It's a major logistics center for the province of Ontario in eastern Canada. It's like the heart of the company, actually.
And how many people are working there?
When they're going full force, there could be 600 to 700 people in the building.
And you were saying that most of those before the union came in were part-time.
Yes, the majority of them were part-time.
You're talking part-time, but people working for many years at that status.
People have been working there part-time for, say, up to 30 years. They have full-time jobs elsewhere, and they work at Sears part-time. A lot of people hold two jobs because of the cost of living today. They work at Sears full-time, and they work someplace else full-time as well.
And when you did unionize, though, some of those part-time jobs went full-time.
Well, we fought for full-time jobs for a couple of hundred people, and we managed to get 137 full-time jobs. The company was kind of shocked when the union came in. I don't think that they were expecting that the union was going to be able to get in. And I can tell you, even from my own perspective, it came in much stronger than I anticipated it was going to. So I think that they were just sitting on their hands, and they got caught there. So our first contract was a fairly good one. It was negotiated fairly quickly, and, it took about 7 months, but we negotiated while we continued working. The union, the local itself, wanted to do the same thing this time, but Sears made it very clear that they wanted to lock us out. They didn't want to negotiate.
So they locked you out, and you've been on the line. Tell us what it's like, been like for the past 8 months.
Well, it's had its ups and downs. There's good and bad times. There's times when members are, you know, happy and they think that the fight is going very well, and there's other times when they're, you know, they feel down and wondering what is going on. You know, when you're in a lockout and the weather is not bad, you have a certain attitude about it, I guess, especially through the warm summer weather that we had this year. If we had been working inside the building, it probably would have been much hotter in there than it was on the outside. But now we're getting down to we're heading into the colder weather, and our members are concerned, and we don't want them out there on the street. And Sears claims that they want to negotiate a fair deal, but they're not showing it in their hand.
So tell us about the impact that you think that this lockout has had, and the fact that you've been able to, you know, maintain your position throughout these months. What's been the impact on the company?
Well, I think that there's been considerable impact on the company. When we first got locked out, I do believe that their shares were around $30, and I think they're around $18 or $19 now. I think that's a considerable impact. We know that they're operating under a lot of chaos. A lot of stores are backed up with their return goods, and I got this, like, personal information from people that I know that do work at the stores. They're saying that this lockout is really affecting everybody right across the country.
And now we're going into the main retail period of the year, the holiday season. What do you expect? What are you hoping to happen as a union, and what do you think the company is hoping for?
Well, I think that we're both hoping that we can resolve the problem and get back to work. That's the main hope. But given that the company isn't going to come up with a resolution, we're going to fight them in the next 2 months, because that's when they make 60 to 80% of their profit. The Christmas season is where the retail really makes their money. And we're going to interfere with their business until they get back to the table and give us something decent.
What are you hoping to gain through the, bringing Sears back to the table and you returning to the table? Like, what's your best outcome?
Well, I think our best outcome is to try to remove some of the their demands, of attaching our benefits to their company policy. We can't let them have everything. If we let them have everything, it doesn't make any sense that we're to anybody. You know, hopefully what we're going to get is something to cover the cost of living, the increases, and perhaps a signing bonus and save some of our benefits.
So this is what's on the table. These are the issues. I really want to thank you for joining us today and explaining to our listeners what this is all about. And is there anything else you'd like to ask from people who are listening right now?
Anybody that's dropping by the Eaton Center, the Scarborough Town Center, the Yorkdale Center, Square One, Bramley City Center, the Woodbine Center, we are going to be at those locations every weekend, Saturday and Sunday from now until we get a contract. So if they're in those areas, they can stop by and help support us there. And please stop shopping at Sears in the meantime.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Robert Coyle, for your time this afternoon.
I really appreciate it. Thank you, Kristen.
Okay. And that was Robert Coyle, the local president of Steelworkers 9537. The 500 members and workers who have been locked out of their jobs by Sears at the Vaughan Logistics Center or warehouse north of the city. So again, the message, don't shop at Sears, return your Sears goods, drop by the locations on the weekends and say hello to the people who are, you know, just trying to maintain, you know, what they've gained through collective action and trying to ensure that working people have what they need to cover, to pay the bills. And that's what it's all about. We're going to go out with some noise from the anti-scab march hosted by the steelworkers earlier this year. The union says that there are people being bussed in to do their work, and there is nothing in Ontario law to prevent that, despite the best efforts of organized labor and some progressive politicians with the New Democratic Party over the years. So we are going to go out with that, and following that, we'll be hearing from Don Whites and Anti-Psychiatry Radio. This is your word of mouth news on CKLN. Do stay tuned.